Most golfers like the idea of playing on the PGA Tour, but realistically, with our skill set, is that ever really going to happen? So instead, what you need to do is get your mates together, put in a little time and planning, and take yourself off and play in the footsteps of giants. That's exactly what we did 30 years ago when we formed the Renegade Players Tour. And since then, we've been playing golf definitely where the pros have played and definitely in the footsteps of our heroes. So sit back and listen as we try and help you over the next few weeks to find ways to play golf around the world and hopefully have a few laughs along the way. Welcome back to another episode of In the Footsteps of Giants, a podcast that is intended to try and help the ordinary golfer think a little bit further afield than just trundling off to his local course every week, and maybe looking at trying to find ways to play golf further afield and around the world with your mates. I've been doing that for over 30 years with my co-host here, who is, as you now know, is referred to as Legendary, but we'll use his real name tonight. Des, you're very welcome back.
Thank you, Thor. Yes, and I'm looking forward to another good, interesting 40 minutes of interesting, fun podcast. Yeah!
Yeah, well, I think we may be overstating the excitement that some of our listeners feel. Regular listeners, thank you very much indeed for coming back. I hope you have given us the 5-star review, that you are pushing us up the podcast charts and helping us to achieve our goal, which is to broadcast inside the next couple of years a live episode from the Masters. Yes, I know it's a goal, but we're determined to get there. Anyway, our guest this evening in the studio, he has been with us before, but we're very pleased to have him back. He got a huge fan reaction from the first visit. So we'd like to welcome back our good mate, Trapper.
Thanks, Marty. Always nice to see you and good to be back again. Well, nice shorts, Des.
Thank you.
Yeah, that doesn't give away the fact that when this episode might have been recorded, Des wears shorts year-round. He is a tough, outdoorsy type of guy. And since he's retired, shorts are the...
Guy's a caddy.
The trouser of choice.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I think it's only fair that since this is Trapper's second visit to the studio, that we actually just briefly examine his tour record over the years with us on tour. He has been a Renegade player for 30 years. He has played in something like 118 of our major championships. He's been suffering a little bit from a back injury for the last year or so, so he hasn't been able to play quite as much in the last 12 months as we would like, but he's working his way back into contention. So, Trapper, how many majors have you won?
Sorry, could I just say, Thor, how many have you won?
I'm at 19.
Yeah, what am I?
16.
16, correct. That's Trapper?
That's very good. I'm very pleased for you both. I actually have won the grand total of one major, but it was the tour. The only one that counts. It's like winning at the Open.
He is entirely correct. It is the toughest one to win, and he won it very well. In fact, Trapper holds a number of tour records for us. He holds the largest individual point score on a single hole with a total of?
That would be a total of 6 points.
Where he held his second on a par four, on which he received 2 shots on the Stapleford card. And
I'd just like to add, it was a beautiful 3-wood from the fairway.
It was, and that was 6 points. He also is the holder of the greatest shot ever hit on film in the Renegade Players Tour vault, and that was at the second hole at Islandia.
That's correct. That and the very first foreign tour that we ever went on. And it was the final day.
How you picked out that concrete stanchion to bounce the ball off and up onto the green remains one of the tour mysteries.
And of course, won me a lot of money.
That's it. I mean, the bet was hit the green 3 out of 4. No, stay try 3 out of 4. Or it hit the green three out of four.
I think it's hit the green.
I thought it was hit the green three out of four.
Well, yeah. I did hit the green three out of four. Yes. And it doesn't matter how the fourth or the third time got there. It might have hit a concrete slab. It might have gone vertically up. It still managed to land on the green.
And he also holds a strange tour record for a gentleman whose handicap has, you know, led him to struggle at times with some of the harder holes on the courses we have played. He is the only person with a 100% record of parring the 17th at Sawgrass with three visits and three pars.
Very impressive.
That's absolutely correct, yes.
So, again, although we give Trapper a little bit of stick every so often for the fact that his golf can be sporadically brilliant but more frequently flawed, he is one of our longest-serving renegades and hence deserves a very special place in our hearts when we invite him into the pod.
Thank you. But before we go any further, since we're talking about my records, you have missed the most impressive one, which I would like to remind you about. I think it was the same night as the six-pointer, and that was when I stood on the 16th tee. No, 17th tee.
The 17th tee, you're correct.
And I came
Where is this?
It was at Eden Derry, which is the small course at Malone.
Okay.
And he stood on the 17th tee and said to the boys,
if I par my way home, I'll finish with 50 points. Instead, I went bogey-bogey and finished with 48 points.
Which is also the highest individual round tour score ever achieved in the Renegade Players Tour. And so he holds, as you can see, several records and yet has bizarrely only converted that to one major win. Yes. And one other significant win, but we're not going to tell you about that just yet. Ooh. That'll come a little bit later in tonight's episode. Tonight's episode relates to a tour in 2007. And in early 2007, four of us had been fortunate enough to head off for our first exploratory tour of Arizona. And we had come back having looked for rattlesnakes and a few other things, but the rest of the Renegades were restless. They wanted some action. They wanted a tour. So a tour which is referred to, its official title is the Iberian Incursion. Not one of my titles, but and it wasn't one of the tours I organized.
You don't even know where Iberia is, Martin.
I just think the Iberian Incursion, it just doesn't sound like a golf tour. But that's what we trundled off to play, and it was a four-night tour in the Basque region, and we all met at Aldergrove Airport and took the Jet 2 flight to Barcelona.
Oh, great city, my favourite capital city in Europe.
Yeah, I have different memories of Barcelona, but
no doubt we'll come on to that later.
We will drift our way towards that. As we have explained to regular listeners before, we tend to plan our tours fairly carefully. We put a fair bit of effort into the selection of the golf courses. We try to make sure everything runs as smoothly as possible. But there are certain times we don't give enough thought to certain things. And this particular tour in 2007 is definitely one of them. We arrive in Barcelona, we get our golf clubs, and we head out to the car hire. And this is not the first time this has happened. When we get to car hire, we split into three groups. We load the cars up with the golf clubs and the various people we're due to carry. And we say, right, we'll meet you at the destination. And on this occasion, it was a golf resort called Emporda.
Lovely memories.
Yeah. Lovely.
And again, 2007, no sat nav.
No sat nav at all. And we head off with some vague directions. Now, from Barcelona Airport to Emporda, it was supposedly a two-hour trip, and we'd flown in, and by the time we were starting to drive, it was getting dark. But we were told to follow the motorway and then follow the signs.
Yeah.
Which we duly did.
Faithful words, which we've heard a few times before.
We have, and we followed the signs and my carload of people, and we drove, and then we drove, and then we followed what we thought were the correct signs, and we drove, and we got very, very lost. And we ended up spending a long time driving up and down, swearing blind we were in the right place, but we could not find the Emporta Golf Resort.
It was when these people started talking French to us, that's when I started getting worried.
Well, we did have by then, by 2007, we had mobile phones, and we eventually managed to find a way to ring each other. And we got talked in by one of the guys who actually had found the place.
And of course, these were mobile phones that did not have Google Maps on them. We just have to pick this clear for the young listeners.
These were good old-fashioned phones. Correct. All you could do is make a phone call.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Phones with no Google Maps. Phones that you could just make a phone call on. But when we eventually got through to one of the guys, it turned out that we had been driving up and down the correct road for about an hour by this stage. And, you know, the road arrived at a roundabout at either end, about 6 miles apart, and we could not find the entrance to Emporta on it. So we were talked down, and we arrived at the entrance to Emporta. Now, I'm old-fashioned enough to think that if it's a golf resort that is trying to attract golfers, it might have something like a sign.
Yes.
It wouldn't just be look like a laneway. And we went up this laneway, which had no lights in it, for about 250 yards before we found
Emporta. We all started to get a bad feeling, really, about it at this stage.
At this stage, you began to wonder why we'd got such a good deal to this particular golf resort.
To the famous resort of Emporta, as I'm sure everybody has heard. Is it still even there, I wonder?
Was it even there the first time?
Yeah. Where is that?
Earlier today, I actually contemplated Googling it, which is something I wish we'd been able to do before we went. Yes. But I didn't actually get round to it today. But if we'd Googled it, I suspect it might have suffered in the economic crisis that hit in 2008, 9, 10.
Yeah.
Because when we got there, the one thing I wrote down here, a little note, and it's about Emporta. It is great deal, out of season, out of food, and it looked like it was out of cash.
Yes, I just remember eating sandwiches there for some reason from some machine or something we got. But
I think that night, the night we arrived, there was no food at all, but we at least thought, don't worry, we'll get up in the morning and we'll go get breakfast.
Good breakfast, yes.
And we went the next morning to get breakfast. And the guy, who was obviously the manager of the place, he looked absolutely shocked that we were expecting food.
He probably didn't even realise we were there.
No. It was a very bizarre. We had apartments and we were sharing. There was a bad boys apartment.
Oh, this was good boys, bad boys. This was the year of the bad boys shirts.
That is correct. Right. The bad boys turned up.
That's right. We've turned up in our matching shirts with the skull and crossbones. And went on and didn't actually, I can't even remember who won the good boys, bad boys.
Oh, the bad boys won again. In fact, the bad boys consistently won. We've never explained this before, by the way.
Correct.
The good boys, bad boys started from the very second tour we were on as a group in 1998. And it was a group of, if there were 12 of us, six were the good boys and they were the... They didn't drink as much. They didn't play cards into the late into the night.
Wore perfume.
That sort of thing.
Yep.
And the bad boys felt they had a reputation to maintain.
We were there to party.
And so by the time 2007 rolled around, we'd had quite a number of good boys, bad boys matches. And to my eternal disgust, from 1998 until 2011... The bad boys won every single encounter.
That's because we bonded as a team around the card table late at night.
And we were straight down to the tee box. We didn't have to put on any lipstick, any makeup or anything.
No.
We didn't worry about trying to find breakfast because we couldn't find any. Yeah. So we just went and played.
And yet, very interestingly, since 2011.
No, look, just go on, Martin. Just go on.
Since 2011. No, I don't think we should. Since 2011, since we finally turned the tide, the bad boys have yet to win another game since 2011. It's very odd because it's always been reasonably tight, but it just seems to.
So odd, Marty. Do you not think it's been rigged by the bad boys? Because I remember the last time we won, there was a little tear in your eye. And one of the guys said, look, this is not going well for Marty. Look, you know, so that's all I'm saying. Okay, I'll leave it there.
I have been on this tour for well over 30 years. The day anyone exhibits any sympathy towards me
yes.
or gives me anything that I don't go yeah, out no, and
it's not
earn,
that sort of tour.
It's not that sort of tour.
I think I showed you a bit of sympathy further on in this tour.
I that's a very different thing, and that's what I call compassion, Pete. And you certainly demonstrated it at a later. But why go there? We're not there yet.
We haven't got past the first night.
We haven't got past, well...
which I had to sleep on the sofa because my buddy who I was sharing the room with was snoring so loudly. There was just no way I could get to sleep. So I slept on the sofa the rest of that trip.
Well, very interestingly, I arrived in, and a bit like one of the other tours we talked about, I arrived into the apartment I was sharing. And we had a chap with us who isn't a regular renegade, but is known on our tour as Funtime Frankie. And Funtime and I were due to share a room. And we got there, and it had one of those beds, Pete, that is designed to have 1.5 people in it, not two.
Not two.
And isn't two separate beds. So a bit like you, my nights at Emporta, I spent on the sofa finding that a better place to sleep than snuggled up to fun time. But I think he was a little disappointed, but he got over it. Anyway, Emporta was one of the golf courses that we played. We played it twice.
It was as good as the hotel, I remember.
I have to say, playing golf around Emporta was a bit like playing around a building site.
It was, yeah. And it was a pitch and putt sort of a golf course. Which,
I remember, I'm very good at remembering the golf courses we played, but this would not be high on my list of recommendations.
No. I don't think Giants have played this one. We're not in the footsteps of Giants yet.
I don't think we're in the footsteps of Giants here, and... Again, I seem to remember there was a huge apartment block built down the side of the 18th hole, and it was a fantastic 18th hole. It looked absolutely brilliant with this huge arcing apartment building on the left-hand side.
Yes, you know, yes.
And then a lake on the right-hand side, and it actually looked very spectacular. Beyond that, I'm struggling to think of almost anything to tell our listeners about that particular golf course.
I think is that where John sort of says, Spain is a lovely country, but and it'll be lovely when it's finished.
I think that might have been a line from that particular day. I do remember standing on the first tee, and I think there was a piling machine going on in the background somewhere, pounding piles in, and it didn't make for a very good start. But Emporta, you know, we have some fun memories of it, but...
Limited.
Mm-hmm. So more importantly, the second day, we had a day trip, and we had a day trip down to PGA Catalunya, which has two fantastic yes. golf courses.
That was, and I know when we were playing it, Martin, that was the number one course in Spain, and I would love to find out if it still is the number one course in Spain, but a really, really, two great tracks.
And only one of them can be the number one course.
Well, of course.
But and I think that's the one we played on the last day.
It is. Yes. We played the second course, their second course on the first day, and it rained. We were actually in waterproofs. Yes, you don't go to Spain to end up wearing your waterproofs. But we've had that more than once.
And I remember that day, actually, the course, the starter for us was a Spanish guy, and all he would do was give off about Ronaldinho, who was playing for Barcelona at that time, if anybody remembers the Brazilian. And he was given loads of about Ronaldinho. So, sorry, that's a memory.
Well, again, over the years, we've talked to a lot of starters about a lot of subjects, and we've tried to get past our standard one, which is nice day, isn't it? It's sunny somewhere, sunny. So we played golf, and everybody played reasonably well. And I think John, who has been a guest on this, was leading after our second day's competition and playing some quite nice golf. And then we left one of the vans that we had at PGA Catalunya in the car park. And because we only wanted to take two vehicles down, and we were driving back to Barcelona because PK, our mate, had sourced for us, I think it was 10 or 11 tickets for the Barcelona-Sevilla football match.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember, Martin, I was in the front seat with you, because we had to have maps in those days. And I said, guys, Barcelona is the pickpocket capital of the world. And I said, guys, we're all going to go out here. We're all going to have a good time. We're all going to have a few drinks. I said, but we'll have to get the tube up to the stadium. And I said, well, you just keep your hands in your pockets where your wallet is. So I thought just because there's a lot of drunk guys, and I thought, well, Marty, you're the only sober one, doesn't drink, and you'll look after us.
I think shepherding was one of my main roles.
Yes.
And anyway, but we arrived safely in Barcelona and we parked up near the stadium because we thought we'll park near the stadium now because that will enable us later in the evening to get away quickly. And we then went from there and we walked. It was a reasonable walk, mm-hmm. but we walked down into Barcelona and into the main Las Ramblas.
Las Ramblas, yes.
Fantastic.
And there was a wee bit of a festival or something going on at the time, I remember.
Oh, there were people dancing, there were people singing, there were people drumming, there were statues that moved when you gave them money. There were all the usual things that you get excited about.
Was that where we stumbled across quite a famous band doing a dress rehearsal?
There was going to be a bit of a music festival, and we went down into a square because we were trying to find the location of where we were due to pick up the football tickets.
Yes.
Because I'm not convinced that the person who was supplying us with the tickets was an entirely legitimate outlet.
Yes. But it was a bit scary, that place. And I'll just add, that band are from Derry at that time. What year were we, 2007? Big band from Derry?
Well, by 2007, they were past their peak, but they were playing the festival. But
because they were sort of at their peak back in the
late 70s.
Actually 70s. The very first band I ever went to see.
Sorry,
and I queued outside the Ulster Hall to see them, and I was either 15 or 16 years old.
So, what is this band called? That's a long enough poser for the listeners.
With Fergal Sharkey, and it was the Undertones.
Yeah.
Although surprisingly, when we saw them rehearsing their set in Barcelona, Fergal Sharkey had long since departed the band. Some of the others were still playing, but they were rehearsing and they seemed to be very keen to take no part in any conversation with
us. That's
right. Oi, we're from Ireland.
But anyway, Martin, this is where I think it gets good, because we picked up the tickets from that wee dingy place.
And we
back
went
streets.
Out for dinner.
And dinner. And a few drinks.
Did we not have a few drinks on a boat beforehand?
We did, you're correct. We went on to the harbour and we had a couple of bottles of rosé on the boat. That's right.
That's right.
The guys.
Each bad boy had a couple of bottles each.
The boys had a couple of bottles of rosé. I'd done a little more sightseeing in Barcelona, being a culture vulture, and was walking along with one of my mates. And we met up because one of our tour organisers had suggested that the restaurant he had booked for us in Barcelona is the best food, the best restaurant.
Number one.
Ever that he has eaten at anywhere in the world. So we went with expectations high, may I say.
We did.
All I can remember is...
We're not going to name this guy, are we?
No. All I can remember is it was average at best.
It was.
There was nothing special about the food. I don't know what night he'd eaten there or what he'd eaten or what state he was in when he ate it.
I remember it was in like a porter cabin, a glorified porter cabin. So it had absolutely no atmosphere. And yes, food. I think you're being very generous with average.
Well, it was poor. I don't know what was going on. I think Portacabin is a little harsh for outside canopied area, but it wasn't spectacular.
Because we were on the waterfront.
Yes.
Still drinking rosé.
Yes, yeah. I guess.
Oh, no, the boys continued to drink and they continued to enjoy their tour. And we then headed off from there. Thinking, because in Barcelona, the football starts very late. It only starts at about 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So about 8:45, we left, joined the crowds, the throng that went down into the subway to get the subway out to...
The crowded subway.
The crowded subway out to Le Camp Nou. Mm-hmm. the Nou Camp, the stadium, the Barcelona stadium. Awesome. And we're out on a crowded train. And as we're heading out the way in a crowded train, suddenly, you know, at one of the stations, there's a lot of pushing, jostling, shouting, everybody, whoa, out of the way. And everything's up, everybody's. And within about 30 seconds of starting off again, I realized my wallets had gone.
Now, this is Thor, the sober person on the tour.
There was one other person who was reasonably sober who was going to be driving home as well. We'd like to stress that
he was sober.
He was actually sober, but I was sober and my wallet was gone. Now, that's a big enough shock.
What was in your wallet, Martin?
My credit cards, my driving license, my cash.
But more importantly?
My match ticket.
Correct.
My match ticket disappeared along with my wallet.
Was this after you'd handed it out to everybody their match ticket and saying, look after your own match ticket?
That's right.
It's very important.
That's only Thor can do.
It is highly likely that as a tour organizer, I had indicated to everybody, you're responsible for your own match ticket now. You know. So we get out at the stadium station and we climb up and we get outside and the boys getting together and they're all singing, Barcelona, we're going to see Barcelona. And I'm going, lads, my wallet's been stolen. And they went, what? And I went, yeah, my wallet has been stolen. My match ticket is gone. And I went, oh, that's awful. Barcelona, Barcelona.
Bye, Marty.
Bye, Marty. And I went, no, we're going to have to arrange where we meet because I have the car keys. Fortunately, I still had the car keys. And I'm driving you home. And they went, oh, yeah, that's right. Well, why don't you walk up here with us to the edge of the stadium? Right, you go wait in the van and we'll go to the football. And I'm going, okay. And one of the other guys who was there, Howard, he stepped forward and he said, Marty, you've obviously lost your wallet and you're not going to be able to go to the football. Do you need any money? And I said, well, it would be very useful to have some. I'm kind of out here on my own. And he said, right, here's some euros. And
you're lucky Howard was on that tour because nobody else would have been giving you money. Yeah.
And then somebody stepped forward and did something that no other renegade was prepared to do.
A gracious volunteer.
A compassionate and gracious volunteer, my mate Trapper, who stepped forward and said,
Marty, I'm not leaving you out here on your own. I'll stay out and we'll just go and have a cup of coffee or something.
I'm glad. Stop. I have a tear. May I?
I'm telling you, it still gets me. Because what I couldn't believe at that point in time is, as those words exited Trapper's mouth, the other lads went great, turned and walked straight into the stadium with their tickets to watch the football.
You have to know that actually, and one of the things I remember, Sevilla's fluorescent pink shirts were absolutely shocking. But there was this guy sitting down beside us, and he was a shifty-looking guy, but he was a lovely guy. We got chatting to him all night. And
well, we a couple of the boys did say, yeah, we were looking round because we were all pretty much sitting together, and why there was one Spaniard in the middle of us all, they couldn't quite work out. And I have a fair idea he maybe had my ticket.
Yeah.
But anyway, that I sat outside.
Sad story.
With Trapper, and I remember at the time your young son was expecting the match report from you because you were getting to see Barcelona Sevilla and he was slightly interested, and you were ringing him saying, no, well, it's still nil all because we were watching it on the TV.
But then it got slightly worse because they found it. They found it on TV at home and started asking where I was sitting.
Just in case you could see. Do you see right up in the top on the left-hand side? Yeah. Can you see? I'm waving. Can you see me? But we sat, and you don't realise until you do something like that and you're waiting 2.5 hours for your mates who are having a good time at the football and you're waiting to drive them about 150 miles back when you haven't had a great night out. And worse than that, on the way home, we had to detour by 12 miles to PGA Catalonia to pick up the other car.
Oh, of course, yes.
And bring it back.
Not a good night for some.
Do you know, before we got back, though, one of the strange things I found, we went to try find somewhere for a drink. And I remember thinking, the atmosphere, there'll be lots happening. And we sat in initially in a little cafe thing. I had a beer, you had a coffee, and there was just no atmosphere. There was nobody there.
And we moved to somewhere else where there was no atmosphere.
But at least that's when we found the TV.
We found the TV and could watch what was happening in the game.
You really thought there'd be some sort of atmosphere, and it was quite subdued that couple of hours.
It's not some of our finest film, but we do have a record of it.
Lovely memories.
Well, we drove all the way back, and we got home at about 3 o'clock in the morning, having been at this football match. And the next day we got up and we had another great round at Importa on the building site, because I was in donking form for that, I'd now worked out, I'd cancelled my credit cards and various things, so I wasn't too panicked about, I was losing even more money. And then that night we thought, well, we're going down into Estartit, which may not be how it's properly pronounced, but it's certainly how we pronounced it. And we had a wee walk around there because one of the guys had sourced and found a pub that was going to show the Ireland-France rugby match in the 2007 Rugby World Cup. And we went there, and Estartit is a Spanish holiday village. Again, there's not an awful lot that I would have to recommend it. Lots
of souvenir shops selling tat.
A lot of tat. And we go to this pub because they'd advertised that the rugby was on. Now, I suppose we were being a little bit optimistic to assume the commentary might be in English, because the commentary was actually in French, and everybody else who seems to have descended on this bar that night were French, and then there were us supporting Ireland. So we were trying to get a little bit of banter going between us and the French. Unfortunately, it wasn't really working because the French were winning the rugby match and they weren't so much bantering as just, you know, waving stuff at us.
I don't think they were very interested at all.
They weren't interested in any sort of
socializing with us at all.
No. And so again, as we lost that match, and I'm pretty sure that exited us from the 2007 World Cup, it was a fairly disappointing. So for me, so far the tour has been get lost the first night, get your wallet stolen the third night, the fourth night we've watched Ireland lose the rugby, and the next morning we had to get up early, pack the stuff because we were going back to PGA Catalonia to play the championship course.
At this point, Des, was the number one course.
I believe it is, Pete. I believe it is. Yes.
And so we go back down to PGA Catalonia on a beautiful morning, and we play the final round of the Sinnerton Cup. Now, a young man was also attempting to win. We played for our cue ball trophy in that particular day at PGA Catalonia, and a young man who had only one major to his name at that stage in his career.
I wonder who that could be.
Was playing, and how did your day go, Trapper?
My day went very well, thanks, Marty. The previous days hadn't been too good. They had sort of followed the similar trend of pretty cack. But this final day, I actually remembered how to play golf again. And
there obviously wasn't too much water around PGA Catalonia.
No, not that I can remember.
There actually was. There's quite a lot of water around PGA Catalonia.
Okay, I can't write. I was just trying to be nice to our guest.
No, I think he played great that particular day.
I actually went on and won the cue ball trophy.
Yay!
And that means that when we relate Trapper's tour record to date, 30 years, it's one major and one cue ball trophy.
The cue ball was won on foreign ground.
It has to be, yes.
I'm pretty certain I've won the cue ball since then.
Oh.
I just can't remember when.
Again, we'll have to speak to our tour stato. I believe that's Scott.
Oh, yes, of course.
He's a regular...
We'll check that out for you.
He's a regular participant in our podcast, albeit that he has yet to make an actual physical appearance at the podcast.
But a fantastic golf course, Trapper, and I know you think you've got lovely memories of it, but that's in the footsteps of giants, that course. Definitely, definitely. Lovely course.
That one has had a European PGA Tour event and is a really nice golf course. There is a first-rate hotel there as well. And if you were booking to fly to Barcelona and maybe play golf in that particular region, I think certainly look for a deal at PGA Catalunya. At the time I wasn't organising that tour. I have no idea why we didn't. What I do know is that if we were going back and somebody said, would you like to go back to Empordà? Again,
well, yes.
I think
if you had a choice between Empordà and the Maze, I think I know which one I would probably choose, even with the weather.
Well, Empordà, and I must actually satisfy my own curiosity after this podcast and actually check whether or not, because if somebody's put a lot of money into it, maybe it's great by now, but it certainly wouldn't be drawing me back. So the 2007 tour ended with John, known as Duvet, on our tour, winning the Sinnerton Cup in PGA Catalunya, with Trapper picking up a cue ball trophy and, in my opinion, the tour's nice guy award for actually staying out when his mate was put in a difficult position. And so for that, I will always be thankful. And you know, again, we come back to what this whole podcast is about. It's stories about our touring over 30 years, and it's also a little bit of advice about the places to go, maybe the places not to go, but to challenge yourselves and go out. There are so many good tours you can go out and have, and we would like to think that we're encouraging people to actually look a little further afield and have some fun. One of our regular features is we try and leave a few stories from the history of the tour, and tonight you have a little story from an earlier time, Des.
No, this Martin, this is just to finish on a little anecdote that which poses again.
You do like a bit of a pose.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But if I asked you how many golf balls will you lose in your golfing lifetime? And I'll start by saying that this is not scientific, because I wasn't very good at science, and I didn't do any science A-levels or anything. I did economics A-level, so it's going to be very economical, this, okay?
And presumably you also did statistics at college, so there's a certain amount of statistical analysis in this.
I'll tell you something, Marty. I got a C in my economics A-level in 1979. Now, that was the days when a C was a good score. How many, on average, rounds of golf do you play a week? Now, I'm fortunately retired, and I play Monday, Thursday, Saturday, and then when our Tuesday night club starts. So, but you think maybe of the working 30, 35-year-old, he probably only gets out on the Saturday competition. So, but I've, for economic reasons, suggested that, on average, the golfer would play two rounds a week.
I've actually played two rounds in the last 12 months. No, okay. 14 months.
Right. I think Trapper is going to drive a coach and horses through your statistical analysis.
Possibly. So
let's go with the average golfer. Uninjured golfer.
Two rounds a week. So let's say that's going to be about 100 rounds. On average, how many golf balls, Martin, would you lose in a game of golf?
I would like to think it averages at no more than one per round.
Well, I know where you're playing at Malone, and of course Malone, you know, there's no wind there at all. And I then take you down to our glass where the wind blows, and I know you've lost at times five or six balls down there.
Oh, everybody has potentially lost a load of golf balls at our glass.
But let's go, and again, I'm suggesting on average we'll lose two balls per round, okay?
Okay.
So we have got 100 rounds a year. We're going to lose two balls.
That's 200.
Correct. Well, okay. Now, the next thing is, what's the average lifespan of a golfer? Now, I started golfing just when I was about 20, serious golf. I would like to think I'm going to play when I'm 80.
Right, but it's not serious golf anymore, does it?
No. This is just average golf now. So let's say 60 years. Okay. So we are losing 200 balls a year, Trapper. Average golfer playing 60 years. How many is that?
Sorry, I've fallen asleep. Sorry. Yes.
Actually, it's about 12,000.
The price of a golf ball, Martin. Now, real time, and I mean, I know inflation and everything that's going to affect here. And I know Trapper and me will be buying our golf balls in Tesco's, you know, the box of lake balls for 7 or 8 quid. And I know you like to have your Pro V1X LGBTs at £40 a carton, you know. But if I sort of average out, I think a golf ball maybe about £1.50. Was that fair enough?
I had a sponsorship for years, so I was okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, he's won a major and a cue ball.
So we are losing 12,000 golf balls in our golfing lifetime at £1.50 a golf ball, Trevor.
Well, on a good day.
So we're going to say probably £18,000. That's £18,000, Thor, that we're going to spend on golf balls in our golfing lifetime. Now, I'm not talking golf shoes. I'm not talking golf bags, golf trolleys. I'm talking just golf balls. So, £18,000, Trevor, does that scare you?
Well, I'd love to know the wine.
Well,
do you really think that it made a lot of sense explaining all of that on a podcast, which is almost certainly going to have a whole range of listeners, which may include some of the players' wives?
Well, just...
There are times, it's a bit like that famous night where we were all at your house and you decided that playing Mr. and Mrs. was a good idea and proceeded to ask my wife how much she thought I spent on golf on an annual basis because you thought it was funny.
Oh, have I let it out of the bag?
Maybe just once or twice. The key thing about tours is planning them, costing them, budgeting them, delivering them, and making sure that everybody has a good time on tour. For In the Footsteps of Giants, we could, as you've probably discovered by now, we could witter on interminably about some of the subjects we like to talk about, and it was quite funny. But if we were to actually say to our guest of the evening, if you had only one round of golf left to play well, you could have a great round of golf. Which course of all the courses you've played over the years as a renegade, which course would you choose to go and play your great round on?
I would like to go back to TPC Sawgrass and actually play 18 great holes as opposed to one great hole.
This is the second time that course has been picked as the ultimate.
Yes.
I'd like to go back and play. My great round should be at TPC Sawgrass. And the really nice thing about that is TPC Sawgrass is available to go and play. You can actually run a tour. You can actually go and play it. You just need to plan for it, book it, and go do it. You will not be disappointed in that golf course.
No, it's great fun. Really great fun.
It's just everything about it is memorable. And so that would be your just one great round. I'll maybe just stretch it a little bit because we haven't done it before. But if you had a one great round left in Ireland, which golf course would you go and play?
Don't say the Maze.
Is this one we have played before?
Yes, it must be a course you have actually played.
Eden Derry.
Okay.
No, I'd like to go and play a great round at Royal County Down because I've never succeeded that either. Actually, I haven't played many great rounds anywhere, but a great round at Royal County Down would be nice.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it is one of the toughest golf courses in the world, as we've talked about in a previous podcast, but is always the number one choice, I suspect, for Americans coming to Northern Ireland in particular. RCD is their number one call. Anyway, thank you very much indeed for tuning in to another episode of In the Footsteps of Giants, and we would hope to see you again soon. So until the next time, my name is Martin.
Well, my name's Des.
My name's Trapper.
And hopefully we'll see you again very, very soon.